at Long Beach, Marina Wood, Erin Nakamura, and Erin Howe. They'll be bringing us their workshop, which they presented at the recent LA Social Forum, entitled It Takes a Village to Rape a Woman. Welcome.
Hi. Hi.
Now, recently in the Daily 49er, an article by Chantel Latini wrote, the Women's Studies Studio Association of Cal State Long Beach concentrated on redefining violence against women as a man's issue rather than primarily a woman's problem in their workshop, It Takes a Village to Rape a Woman, at the recent Los Angeles Social Forum. Marina, you stated this workshop was not about what women can do to reduce our risk of being assaulted. It was about recognizing and understanding the fact that we live in a rape culture, where rape and the idea of rape is normalized and supported, and the survivors are largely dismissed. Tell our listeners, what is it like to live in a rape culture, and what is a rape culture?
Okay. Well, really quickly, I just wanted to mention that our title is directly taken from the book The Macho Paradox by Jackson Katz. We're leaning heavily on him. He's a great feminist man. Anyway, what the concept of a rape culture means is that basically men who rape are not social deviants or bad apples or just a few sick individuals, but are actually just normal guys who are acting in accordance with our socio-cultural norms. So when you see, for example, a rape scene in a movie or rape as a plot line on Law and Order, CSI, or any music, pornography, movies, video games, radio personalities, or billboards that glorify male violence and aggression and show females as passive and submissive, then it isn't hard to see the way that our gender roles are at odds with each other and translate into men's violence against women. So everything contributes to the rape culture.
And in this redefining and rethinking of violence against women, which is usually a woman's problem, versus focusing on the perpetrator, which is usually a man, talk to us about this concept, this idea that you've been focusing on and analyzing and putting into effect.
Okay. Basically, as far as reframing violence against women and changing it into men's violence against women, which is what we're trying to do, all we have to do is look at the numbers. If 99.8% of convicted rapists are male, then we can see that even though some survivors of rape are male as well, by and large, it's at the hands of other men. So, and by the way, that doesn't say that 99% of men are rapists. Most men are not rapists, but most rapists are men. But by socially punishing the survivors, by disbelieving and blaming them, and not providing adequate resources, and ignoring who the actual perpetrators are, we're actually not only just allowing rape to occur, but also socially, we're supporting the men who rape.
Right, and we're not putting enough research and work into focus. If we would stop focusing on women and the survivors, which they do need support and help and healing, but if we put all that energy into looking at the perpetrators and dealing with that whole situation, it would flip the script in a second, you know?
Right.
And one of the things is that only 6% of rapists do time. So
yeah.
Obviously it's not working, our system we have right now.
It's not messing up. It's not following up. And you could just see the way that masculinity is constructed, as socially constructed, is as a violent, aggressive thing. And so they're taking that out, as they're taught to, on women, unfortunately.
Erin Howe, now you did a workshop on the mass media and it's how it reflects and sometimes reinforces gender roles. Can you kind of give us a little piece of some of the dehumanizing media that you've heard?
I would love to. We've spent a lot of time talking about the many images in the media that contribute to rape culture, but I want to talk specifically about what Jackson Katz calls bully with a microphone. And I think that what's really striking us is there's not more of a community outrage about the Tom Likas show, especially in light of the community response to the Don Imus controversy. There was community outrage over the Imus's horrific comments about the female athletes at Rutgers. However, Tom Likas is on the air 5 days a week spouting off misogynistic messages to over 60 cities in the United States. And his messages include encouraging rape, which he emphasizes is easier with survivors of sexual assault. He also frequently refers to women as human urinals and sperm depositories. So I think that we should pay special attention to Tom Likas. And in fact, right now we're working on mobilizing some kind of action to call recognition to the situation.
And is this with the Women's Studies group, or are you connected with other groups working on this? Because, yes, you're right. The IMUS case made huge news, and Tom Likas keeps doing what he's doing, and these are horribly obscene things that he's saying, and he's promoting rape.
Right. Right now, we're working on organizing it through the WSSA, but it is definitely our goal to create a web of organizations that will work together to combat the messages promoted by Tom Likas. So hopefully it will be across college campuses and even outside of college campuses. We're willing to connect with anybody who cares about these issues. The more the merrier, really, when it comes to supporting one another in this mission.
Well, right, if we're going to frame it in hate speech, which we have with others, like when Tom Likas says, all men do it, we find different weaknesses in women. Sometimes all men do it. So he's claiming it's just part of being a man is raping women.
Exactly, and it's really important to note, too, that Tom Likas claims to speak for all men. So it's really important that men who do not believe the way that Tom Likas believes really take a stand and make their voice heard. Because if all we're hearing are messages like the ones from Tom Likas, and those are perpetuating rape and rape myths and other atrocities about gender, then we really need to get some other men to mobilize a combating voice.
Christine, you had a question.
Oh, well, more like a comment. Hey, Aaron, it's Christine. I was just thinking it would be great if you could find somebody that was, you know, kind of more recognizable in the media to maybe even approach Tom Likas that was a male that, you know, was behind your program that you're putting together, you know, to kind of show that there's, you know, male support for what you're trying to do.
That's a really, really great suggestion. And it's also really important that we have men that are helping with us in this fight, because women can't do it. Women can do a lot. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
We really need to band together, because there are certainly men who don't agree with him. So we just need to find them and help them to feel that it's their responsibility to work at this problem.
And it's also like, just, you know, I don't want to sound cliche or something, but, you know, it's like leading by example. So, you know, finding men who are just interested in promoting equality, period. I mean, in addition to all the stuff that's going on with the Tom Likas show and his, you know, super misogynistic commentary about women, it's important, I think, to get the men involved, because they're the ones who hang out with each other and talk about these kinds of things, you know.
And they learn from each other.
They learn from each other, just like women and kids and old people and young people, et cetera.
And statistically, it has been, you know, studies have all shown that when men teach other men, this is not how to treat a woman. She's another human being, you know, and don't support. Like, if a guy comes to if a guy comes to another friend and says, you know, I did this and that to her,
right,
it's up to that other guy to say, no, that's not cool. This is not how you treat a woman. You got to, you know, and teach each other how to treat women.
Yeah, unfortunately, men, I mean, it's really great that sometimes men can speak to other men and be heard really well. And, you know, the same message can come from a woman once and not be heard, and a man the second time. And that is unfortunate, but if that's where we're at, then we need those men to step forward and use their voice and use the privilege that they have in this society, the power that they have as men.
Exactly.
And let's talk now more about the workshop, the first part of the workshop, which is called the String Exercise. Aaron Macanara, can you talk to us about that, the role of the community and the courts and that part of the workshop?
Okay. Well, basically, the string exercise was a role-playing exercise that it emphasized the importance of every reaction a survivor experiences after being sexually assaulted. So when a survivor is sexually assaulted and then reaches out to members of the community, whether it be law enforcement, religious organizations, partners, friends, or even their family, and when they're not believed or they're blamed, this perpetuates the rape culture that Marina spoke about earlier. So by placing full responsibility on the victim of rape, it indirectly benefits the perpetrator by not acknowledging the crime itself, just isolating the victim, which prolongs any trauma acquired from, you know, the sexual assault she experienced. This exercise helps bring to light the huge effect that collective disbelief has when it's from the community. It affects the victim and to a huge extent, but to no extent, like, the rapist is affected to a very, very minute extent.
And so how does this, in the workshop, though, how does this manifest, like what you described, what happens at the workshop?
Okay, well, basically, people stand in a circle, and one person stands in the middle, and everyone takes on a specific role that's on a card, and they all have one line they say. And so the survivor stands in the middle, and the survivor holds a piece of string, and every other person has a piece of string that they're holding that's connected to the survivor. So the survivor basically says, I was raped, can you help me? And each person takes on that role that's on their card, and they respond by disbelieving her or blaming her for being sexually assaulted. And every time that the survivor, which in our workshop was a woman, spoke to, you know, the members of the community, and the community member disbelieved her, we then cut the string, you know, literally breaking that bond with that person, and eventually she was isolated alone with no one but the person perpetrated the crime.
Wow. I hope you get to do these kind of workshops more often, because it's very powerful to, like, actually experience these kind of things and see it. I don't want to run out of time, and we are going to soon, so let's get into the language part of the workshop. Marina, you are going to talk to us about the language exercise?
Sure. We did a couple language exercises, but basically, in general, the language exercise we did was meant to show how language reflects our values and shapes the way we think. So, for example, one exercise we did was to show how the use of passive voice rather than active voice can erase the perpetrator and highlight and blame the victim. So, in one exercise, we begin an active voice and we say, John beat Mary. And then we turn that into Mary was beaten by John, so John is now at the end and kind of de-emphasized. And then it becomes Mary was beaten, and John just becomes invisible, and then it changes into Mary was a battered woman, or is a battered woman.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, and those are things we don't even think of. Yeah. It's been ingrained in us. I know I say so, and battered women. We've gotten so assimilated to that.
And it totally erases the person who actually is doing it, which is the man. So after we did this exercise, everyone kind of got a little enlightened, and then we did everyone looked at a different article, and we kind of discussed about how the language of the article, basically the implications of how that language is, how it implicates the survivors of men's violence.
Right, because the discussion then goes around poor Mary, or what's Mary's life like, and, you know, as a battered woman, she becomes like, you know, this victim, but the guy who hurt her, forget it, you know, it's not even thought of anymore.
Right.
And she's sometimes very pathologized and demonized by society.
Yeah, and then we look at, well, what's wrong with her that this happened to her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in that way, if we reframe it, is what's wrong with these men that are going out and raping the women, you know? Not how many women are raped, how many women have been battered, but how many men are battering and raping, or how many men are raping several people. You know, we need to look at them because they're the ones doing it.
And let's go into the oppression part of the, Erin, you were going to talk to us about the oppression part of the workshop.
Yeah. One of the main things that we want to highlight is that rape is not a sexual crime. Rape myths have rape highly sexualized, but in actuality, rape is just about power and control, and that the rapist maintaining his dominance. And so when our society values certain groups of people over other groups of people, it creates an ideal space for aggressive crimes such as rape. So we spoke a lot about how valuing certain groups created oppressors, and in turn, devaluing other groups turned them into target groups, which were then less powerful and dominated over by the oppressors.
That breaks it down perfectly, and I'd love to get into this more, but we are unfortunately out of time. How can our listeners find out more about the work you're doing, and also if they want to get involved in some of the events you have coming up, and also if this workshop would be available at for like if a school called you?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, of course it would be available if a school called you. We're very much about outreach, and the more the message spreads, I think the more effective it can be, of course. But as far as what we can do, what people can do now, if somebody comes to you and asks for help about any sort of sexual violence, or if one of the people listening right now needs help at all, the Sexual Assault Crisis Agency in Long Beach is key in offering a 24-hour hotline. They also offer free short-term counseling, court accompaniment, survivor advocation, and community outreach. And even if you live outside of the area, we have plenty of referrals and resources. And the phone number for SACA is 562-989-5900.
Can you say that number again?
The number again is area code 562-989-5900. And SACA is full of wonderful women who are doing wonderful work, including us. We're all three part of SACA, so we really value the environment at SACA. It's very feminist-oriented, and you won't have to worry about kind of rape myths being perpetuated there. So, and then as far as what people can do, if you see anything in your community that seems wrong, it's really important to mobilize and do something about it. An example, right now on our campus, there's this fraternity that offers a welcoming party for freshman girls called the Cherry Bus. And we're currently working on an educational campaign to help, I guess, kind of counter education for the ideas that they're promoting.
Right, and the girls go to the party and think it's fun.
Right, and the shirts that they wear say, "Don't pull out until you feel the until the cherry bust." So
it's
about getting freshman girls who are excited to come to a party with these fraternity boys, and they're very excited. So the idea is that they get these girls drunk and they have sex with them. It's very overt in their shirts, and it's incredible that they're so blatant about it, but they are. So they're basically asking for us.
Totally. It's if they're going to be that obvious, then you got to just with the same fight, you know, same power.
Yes. And then one other thing, a really fun way to learn about feminism and the kind of things that we're talking about is to come to our free feminist film screenings. We had two last semester, and we're going to have ongoing feminist film screenings this semester. Our upcoming film is Look Us in the Eye, The Old Women's Project by feminist filmmaker Jennifer Abbott. And she will be there during the semester for a conversation to follow. And that's going to be on Thursday, September 18th at 6:30 p.m. And I have a website that I can give you in case anybody's interested. csulb.edu/org/college/WSSA. I know it's a long one, so let me repeat it. csulb.edu/org/college/WSSA. And if there's any information, or if anybody wants to email us about any questions of what we talked about today, we'd be more than happy to let anybody know information.
Thank you, ladies, so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And we will be right back with Sin. Is she ready?
I think Sin's ready, but first we're going to go to some promos. So you're listening to Feminist Magazine here on KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming live and archived on the web at kpfk.org.
Don't know my face, but that's straight, cause I might introduce it to the place. Before I do that, I want you to know, feline sciences unloading the mother load with bald head, dreadlocks, braids, and froze. 60 fit out,
Sin DePoet is joining us now. Sin stretches her talent not only as poet and performer, but also as organizer and host of events that allow others to showcase their work. She is currently working on her first book and is experimenting with incorporating music into her poems in